There are war zones all over the world, and we always think it's remarkable that people rush to them to volunteer to help civilians caught in the crossfire. Dr. John Kaler, a pediatrician from Chicago, is one of them. He co-founded MedGlobal, which works with local healthcare providers and non-governmental agencies in medical missions around the world: Syria, Yemen, Bangladesh, Haiti, Puerto Rico. Dr. Kaler came to our attention in a powerful CNN report from Clarissa Ward. She visited a hospital in Yemen where Dr. Kaler was assisting a staff struggling to treat patients. Here he's in the neonatal ward.
So in addition to being preemie, these babies are jaundiced.
Jaundiced.
Right? And so they're going to get phototherapy. At this point in time, even if we got more beds here to fill the numbers of patients, we don't have the staff.
Clarissa also introduced us to a little boy who came to the hospital very sick, a lung infection, and later died. That's not always the outcome, of course, but it put in stark relief how challenging providing medical care in a war zone is. So how and why does he do it? Dr. John Kaler joins us now from WBEZ in Chicago. Dr. Kaler, welcome, and we have to say thank you for your work.
Well, you're very welcome. The work is work of my heart, and I really appreciate you acknowledging it.
Well, to talk about Yemen, for instance, you told Clarissa about some of the conditions there. What are people missing?
Well, it's the second time that MedGlobal has been to Yemen in the past 6 months. The first time was a couple of months ago when we were up further north in an area very close to the fighting in Sana'a called Marib. And in that location, the town, which had been a major source of oil revenue in the past, had tripled its population in a matter of a year and a half with internally displaced personnel from Sana'a. So as you might imagine, their healthcare facilities were overwhelmed with patients to the point where the major teaching hospital there actually had to shut the pediatric facility down. Because there were so many war wounded and adults displaced.
Well, you didn't even have soap.
No, and none of these areas are the most basic of needs met. In the south, the place where I met Clarissa Ward, we were at a hospital, a pediatric hospital, a wonderful hospital. The name of the hospital is Sadaka, which translates to charity, essentially giving good charity. And it was in Aden, and Aden is currently far away from the fighting. It serves as a capital now that the facilities have moved from Sana'a. And so this was a 300-bed children's hospital that was completely overwhelmed with patients in need and underserved with the most basic of resources such as soap, beds. Three children, I was in the intensive care unit or in the neonatal intensive care unit, and you might know what phototherapy is. It's when babies get jaundiced at birth and they treat them for X hours and they go home happily. Well, there were four babies in one crib receiving phototherapy, which is normally reserved to, one baby per phototherapy unit. They had a nursery that had was supposed to serve 35 newborns, and they had 70 there when I was there. It's a heart-wrenching situation.
Yeah. Look, you talk about them being in Syria, in Aleppo. Of course, the devastation there, barrel bombs.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the wounds that children come in with?
So we were in Aleppo. We were probably the last, two colleagues and myself were probably the last Western physicians that were able to be in there just before the siege was closed over in July of 16. And so what would happen, the Assad regime would do two things. They would drop a barrel bomb, which is essentially exactly what it sounds like. It's a barrel filled with dynamite and things like that. And it would blow up. It would blow up and devastate a local area. They'd drop it into a local community. And then what would happen? Drop it from a helicopter. And so all of the types of wounds you could imagine if kids were out, so if it was dropped around the time of a market or something like that, you would have terrible head wounds. You would have terrible wounds to the abdomen, to limbs, things that would you can think about as concussive wounds and shrapnel wounds in the immediacy. But what would happen is if the kids were inside a building and the bomb was dropped close enough to the building, it would blow walls out, blow windows out. And so what you would get then would be all the trauma associated with secondary shrapnel, dust and pellets and things like that. And so you'd get a lot of superficial head wounds, a lot of more superficial wounds, but you'd also get things like eye wounds, ear wounds, things that are extremely hard to deal with in any place.
And you get trauma. You talk about what's the 1,000-yard stare?
Well, 1,000-yard stare. If you remember the picture of that little boy in the back of a ambulance in Orange, and you see him sitting there with the blood. Well, what you literally see, not from so much from the picture, but from the video that goes with it, you see a child who you know is seeing, but not comprehending. So his vision has not been blinded, but he is essentially closed off. It's what happens under extreme trauma. The senses close down to the point where the only way the body, and more particularly in this situation, the mind can tolerate it is to essentially close off. This is what in World War I they called
shell shock.
Shell shock, yes, yeah. Exactly. And shell shock and post-traumatic stress, and it's things like that.
So you have a rash of children attempting suicide?
Well, there are children attempting suicide. There's two big worries in war zones. So in a place like Yemen where famine, it's much more so bullets and bombs aren't killing as many people in Yemen as starvation is, as cholera is, as infectious disease are. We just came up to a situation where diphtheria was killing, but it killed three children while close to when we were there. Diphtheria is not something most physicians, I'm old enough to have seen a case here in the States, but they're dealing with tens of them in Yemen. And we have a clinic that we set up to serve the Rohingya in Bangladesh.
The refugees.
And there's been hundreds of cases in Bangladesh of diphtheria. Back in Yemen, where famine is, that's cholera has the largest cholera outbreak in history ever recorded. Over a million people have had cholera. Luckily, the Vibrio, the germ that causes the cholera, isn't real dangerous this time. But there's still been 3 to 5% death rate, which is a significant amount.
Yeah. So how do you do this? I can hear the Chicago in you. And, how do you come home to Chicago having seen this? What do you do with this?
Well, I get asked that question a lot. And I'm blessed to have six wonderful children and 12 equally wonderful grandchildren. And one of the things that makes me comfortable is that there's a feeling that as I give, so would someone else give if my children and grandchildren needed it. So I'm able to say what I've done, maybe small, it certainly may not be a lot, but it made some use. It made some help. And I'm able to deal psychologically with that, knowing that although I couldn't have helped everybody, I certainly helped somebody.
It's just so admirable. And yet you wonder, you just mentioned six children and 12 grandchildren. Do you ever think, for their sake, maybe don't go into a war zone anymore?
Don't think that at all. I think actually the children all grown and done well. The grandchildren have wonderful parents. It's much better for me to do this than for younger people to do it. Younger people still have that part of their life to live. If something, God forbid, were to happened to me, I've been through that part of my life. This is a legacy time for me. So, no, I don't think that.
That is Dr. John Kaler, co-founder of Med Global. Dr. Kaler, thank you and best to you.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the attention for the organization and for the needs of these very, very needy children. Thank you very much.